Welcome to Life and Lattes with Paula, Andy, and Lisa. Three friends, one table, and you. Sit down and let's get three cups deep.
Welcome. Welcome to Life and Lattes. And I hope that you're joining us on this beautiful Wednesday morning. This is your moment to just chill, to join our table, to grab your coffee or your cortado or your smoothie or whatever your poison is. And just take a moment for yourself. Join our conversation as we get three cups deep today into the concept of the inner child. And we're going to be making a big distinction between being childlike and being childish. And the parts of ourselves that have not grown up, and that's not a good thing. And the parts of ourselves that have not grown up, and that's a wonderful thing. So that's all coming up later in our show. For now, let me say hello to Andy and Lisa and to little Andy and little Lisa, who are also joining us today, as they always do. Our little parts are always there. So hello to little Paula as well, who's in the studio. And good morning, girls. How's it?
Good morning. Good morning. I actually feel very lucky because I met little Paula and adult Paula. I know them both.
That's so cute. I love that. Well, you know, that little Paula was 11 years old, but there's even a littler little Paula who's smaller than that. And we all have those parts, don't we, Liz?
We definitely do. We have many parts, but we certainly walk around with a child part.
I also like how you pronounce the word part. It's very like Irish. It's confused.
I don't know if she's Israeli or South African or Australian, so she's a bit of everything.
And if I say
lots of parts.
Part. She's got lots of parts.
My kids tease me about it too, but I guess over the years I realize that people just don't understand me.
And so it doesn't matter what accent you have.
I understand you, Liz.
I love the accent.
And the listeners understand you and they love you. So tell us that you love Lisa. WhatsApp us 061-895-1019. Lisa's having her little part is having an insecure day. She feels people don't get her. They do. They understand the accent. They understand you. But no, seriously, do WhatsApp us because, as you know, every show we start off with Espresso Yourself. And we've always got lots to say on that. But we would actually love to hear from you. Espresso Yourself is the part of our show where you can just chime in with anything, whatever you feel like expressing. It's called a whiffle, actually. It's a coaching thing, isn't it, Anne?
A whiffle.
Yeah. Well, when my husband did business coaching, we used to start off each session with the team with a whiffle, what I feel like expressing. And it was wonderful. It was very random. So don't feel the need to be deep. That's for later in the show. That's three cups deep. For Espresso Yourself, just join the conversation. Let us know you're listening. And also, thank you to everybody who has joined our Life and Lattes Facebook page. And you'll find all of our news and stuff and videos. And I'll also post a link there to Andy's daily, what's it called? Positive Recharge, which you really must join. It's just really drip irrigation of just positivity and beautiful, beautiful mindset training and just gorgeous stuff that Andy posts. And she puts so much thought and care into those things. So you really must join. Anyway, so do Espresso Yourself, 061-895-1019. And we would love to hear from you. After the break, Andy's going to espresso herself.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome back to our show. Okay, Andy, espresso yourself.
So I literally am very excited about this page I joined called New on the Shelf. And it literally lets me know about very cool products that exist. So one cool thing is actually this ice cream. It's this fruit-colored ice cream that Lisa's obsessed with.
Fruit-colored?
It's like a fruit, and then it's covered in an ice
cream. Oh, covered. Fruit-covered. Oh, I thought you said fruit-colored.
So we discovered there's a brand new flavor, and I had to bring the first tub that ever landed in Israel direct to Lisa's door for her to sample the new raspberries covered in chocolate. But the funniest one was this morning.
Yeah.
Apropos Paula sharing on live radio that she bought an alarm clock. On New on the Shelf, there is the funniest new alarm clock where at the top of the alarm clock are puzzle pieces. And as your alarm goes off, the puzzle pieces fly into the air. And the only way the alarm clock will switch off is if you collect the puzzle pieces. There's three, and you have to put them back into the correct slots.
That sounds like hell on earth. Snooze is my favorite thing.
That is literally, Paula. You're going to have to get up, find those puzzle pieces, get the right shapes in the right slot, and not hit snooze.
That actually sounds like morning torture.
That
I'm
does.
Sorry.
That actually does. My brother, David, in Denmark,
he has
invested in a whole alarm clock system that also asks you like very complicated questions so that you can't press snooze. You have to like go through a series of hoops before you can actually switch off the alarm. But I bought my son, Ari, an alarm clock that has wheels and runs away from you. It rolls away from you so that you've got to jump out of bed to go and catch it.
That's so funny.
It's an alarm clock on wheels. I love that. Oh, I want to actually also join that thing. Just, you know, for new and interesting products to buy with my unlimited budget. It sounds amazing.
It's funny to see, you know, how innovative people are when there's a real need. It's really fun to
innovation
see what's out there and
is,
how creative people are.
It is. It is the most remarkable thing. It's like, what is it?
It's amazing.
Necessity is the mother of invention, or
it's not actually inventing anything from scratch necessarily. It's just upgrading an existing product, but being really funny and smart about it.
Yeah, but it's also answering a need. And the need is like some people, not me, obviously,
struggle.
I'm sorry, no one needs to build a puzzle as they recommend in the morning.
No, it's actually, the struggle is real. Some people do. And I mean, well, actually, my alarm clock system was going swimmingly until this morning when I actually slept through it because it's only got 1 minute of sound. And I do sleep with earplugs for, you know, my husband snoring. So, you know, so I actually slept through that 1 minute and it was a bit of a disaster because my phone was then in a different room. So I don't know what to do about that. I was so gung-ho about my alarm clock and now it's like got a little bit of an issue. So I'll have to figure that out. But no, people do struggle.
Goal achievement is not linear. There will be lots of curves along the way.
Oh, gosh, I love having a coach on standby. I just love it. It's so true. You think you've like, okay, well, I got the yoga mat. I visualized. I started with my ABCs of goals and I was doing so well. And then now I'm not doing yoga anymore on Sundays. And am I a failure? But no, it's called
a cha-cha.
Yeah. I love that.
A few steps forward and a few steps back.
Oh, my gosh. But what do we do? What do we do to get back on track? How do we
dance?
Just dance. How do we dance? I don't know. It's so cold.
Sometimes I don't think it's that deep. Sometimes I think it's just like Nike. Like, just do it.
And it
like
is. That's it.
We make all this stuff in our minds and we make it complicated.
A swish that's not a proper swish. It's like a swish like this. And it goes, when you kind of want to do it, but not really.
That's me. That should be in my shoes. Oh, my gosh. It is the most brilliant logo, Nike. Absolutely the most brilliant, brilliant logo. One of the best of all time. But no, I think that a lot of people do struggle to wake up. And some people actually, including my son, will actually sleep through all the alarms and actually, you know, not even get to school at all. So they do need that puzzle thing. Andy, send me that link immediately because the wheels have come off. No, the wheels, honestly, the wheel alarm clock is not really doing the trick. And maybe we need to upgrade to the puzzle.
I think I'm forever grateful for the Israeli army because what they have managed to do with my son that I could not do in 19 years. Oh, my goodness.
Because the army has got various other weapons in their disposal, like court martials and, I don't know, 500 push-ups. Yes. Hard consequences is what the army.
Consequences. Yeah. The struggle is real.
All right. Are we ready for our single shot? Let's see if anybody has WhatsApped us on our WhatsApp line. Let me see if I know how to find this link. I don't know. This could be an older WhatsApp. I'm not sure. Is this from now, Craig? Good morning. As a 67-year-old dad and grandpa, is that from now? No, that's from 9:35 a.m. Okay. fine, nobody loves us and nobody has espressoed themselves. It's fine. What you can also do is you can also write it on our Facebook page, on our Life and Lattes page. You can espresso yourself there, and you can WhatsApp us, and you can even email us. We have an email address, Landel, lifeandlattes@chai.com. And you can even be anonymous if you want to. But right now we are moving straight along, full speed ahead into our single shot. Andy, what you got?
So I saw yesterday on so many different news sites this amazing groundbreaking research, and I actually screenshotted the headline. It is a first of its kind treatment in Israel that was recently performed in Rambam Medical Center, where specialists helped a man in his 40s detox from an extreme dependence on opioid painkillers. He had reached 130 pills a day.
Oh, my God.
And this procedure lasted just 20 minutes. It's a brand new breakthrough, a therapeutic platform that allows the doctors to do non-invasive treatments for many different problems. And the head of functional neurosurgery actually is the one interviewed in the article. And he says it's a major scientific breakthrough that is going to have far-reaching implications and reshape the way we approach all addiction treatments. It's fascinating. It's basically an electrical activity in an area of the brain that is central to satisfaction, pleasure, and reward. And the treatment is based on a very new Israeli technology, similar to technology that is already treating tremors in Parkinson's, for example. And it basically focuses on sound waves directed into the brain, guided by an MRI. And this team is using this non-invasive technology to do this neuromodulation.
This is incredible. Wow.
It's literally changing and affecting nerve cell activity.
And non-invasive through sound waves.
Yes, the patient reported a craving level of 0 out of 10.
Wow.
After using 130 pills a day.
That's going to absolutely revolutionize the opioid epidemic in America.
They said this is nothing less than a medical and therapeutic revolution.
I was going to say a miracle.
Yeah. Very interesting, because opioid addiction was recently defined as a massive global epidemic, especially in the United States.
Yes.
It's costing a minimum of $60 billion a year. And Israel was actually ranked first in the world in opioid use a while ago and is now curbing this trend.
This is incredible
news.
Wow, I love
it. Phenomenal.
We do need to take a break. And then when we come back, Lisa is going to be talking because she's very quiet this morning.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome back to Life and Lattes. Lisa, you are so quiet this morning.
Am I?
Yes.
I don't feel okay. Well, I'm here. Let's go.
Well,
let's
you know what? Maybe you know, you're definitely going to have a lot to say about our Three Cups Deep topic today, about the inner child, and I love this thing. I found such a useful phrase that there's a very big difference between childlike and childish, and there's beautiful qualities that children have, those childlike qualities of wonder, of creativity, of being able to play, of not holding on to outcomes, not holding on to anything, you know, living in the present. Those are just incredible childlike qualities that we really have to find a way to bring into our adult lives. But then there's also the childish qualities, which is, what are those, Liz? What are those kind of...
I don't know. There's a range, right? Temper tantrums, demanding,
impulsivity,
black and white thinking.
Black and white.
There's lots of childish behaviors. You know, in Hebrew, magieli, like it's owed to me.
Yeah.
You know, I want what I want, and I want it now. Those are, you know, or also the whole world. You know, children are, kindness is actually, or seeing of the other is actually a concept that has to be taught to kids. You know, they don't know it. So it's very childish and very appropriate for kids to think that the world spins
narcissism
on their
ass. Narcissism is childish. Yeah. yeah. Very, very interesting. So they are both those sides. So
yeah.
What did you want to say? I can see your...
Well, I think it's also just helpful. You know, we talk about the inner child, but I actually think it's very important that we just explain to people what that is.
Okay.
You know, it's one of those words that's become a little used right now, kind of like the word triggered. Mm. And I think it's really important to first just state, well, what are we talking about? You know, the inner child is really not literally a child living inside of you. I think that's important to say. But it's a way of describing how your early childhood experiences would influence your emotions or your relationships or your beliefs or even your behavior as an adult.
Mm.
And it's really almost...
It's your memory almost. It's a part of you that remembers what made me feel safe, what made me feel loved, what made me feel rejected, what made me feel supported.
Yes, it's those very, very, very strong memories that are, I think... if I remember correctly, they stored in the amygdala. And then what you do is everything you process in life gets passed through that filter of those core childhood memories. And so that's where triggers come from. Because if it's a very strong childhood memory, something evokes that, it gets... Okay, I'm babbling. But I mean, is this even true? It's definitely something I came across in one of my articles that I wrote many years ago. But basically, that like those very strong emotions, that's how we tend to process life through that filter.
The amygdala, the whole nervous system's job in the human being, right? The nervous system is there to keep us safe.
Mm-hmm.
So the amygdala, right, which is like your inner brain's alarm system. You know, if you bang on a car and the alarm is there and it says, going,
yes,
that's going off. So inside your brain lives a little car alarm, which is the part mm-hmm. of your brain that alerts your entire system. So it's actually, it works faster than your thinking brain. Your thinking brain is actually slower than your nervous system brain, your amygdala.
It's there to protect you.
Right. And the whole system is protective. It's there to keep you safe,
mm-hmm.
which means it's always scanning for danger. What we want is
any threat.
Right. What we want is to not have a hyper-aroused amygdala that starts to perceive danger when there isn't any.
Mm.
Childhood experiences that often, you know, I always say on the show, when we look back at our childhoods, we either remember really fun things that we did or really difficult things that were said or done to us.
Yeah.
You know, we don't remember the day today. But our amygdala, which lives beyond time and space, it's not bound in time and it's not bound by space. It, you know, the hippocampus and all those things that ground us in time and space do not exist in this part of our brain.
Oh, that's interesting.
The amygdala is, the amygdala is always scanning for danger.
Mm.
And so when I have adult experiences that remind me of childhood threat or of childhood difficulty, the amygdala is going to go, danger, danger, deal with this.
Right. Liz, you're so smart. Yes, thank you. That was such a clear explanation. I love that.
Brilliant. It's brilliant. She's brilliant.
She's brilliant.
What's important is that it's not a flaw. Often we get frustrated. We think it's a flaw, but it's actually not a flaw. It's just an adaptation.
Mm.
And it's a survival strategy that was always designed to keep us safe. And the problem arises when it kept us safe when we were younger, but they no longer serving
us
as adults who are choiceful, purpose-driven, responsible.
Well, I'll give you like a more concrete example of that. You know, we call them maladaptive behaviors. So, for example, if I was a little girl and I lived in a home that was scary, let's say I had a parent who shouted and was angry. You know, there are a few things scarier than an angry parent or an angry teacher. In fact, P.S., I'm going to just add this in as a side. I have interviewed hundreds of children over the years. And if I ever ask them about school and I say, do you like your teacher? And if a kid says to me, no, I don't. 100% of the time, their response has been when I said, why don't you like your teacher? 100% of the time, it has been because she shouts. Mm. So anger, scariness, right, puts our alarm system on high alert. So let's say, as an example, so that you guys can follow this, if I was a kid who grew up in an angry, scary house, but as a kid, my options of how I could manage that were limited. I couldn't fight the angry, scary person because they're bigger than me. I couldn't flight, right? I couldn't run away because I'd nowhere to go. And so my only option as a kid growing up, let's say, if you grew up in an angry, scary household, was to freeze and grin and bear it. right? To figure out how to just keep yourself safe. Now let's fast forward you and say you're 20 years later and you're having an argument with your husband and he yells. That part of your brain that's scanning for danger is going to go, oh my God, yelling is scary, yelling isn't safe, and I'm going to check out or freeze. But as an adult, that's maladaptive. So what saved me as a kid, which was to, let's say, keep quiet and just go hide in my room, as an adult, me keeping quiet and going and hiding in my room isn't helpful. Because as an adult, I'm able to say, hey, I don't like being yelled at, and I don't want you to yell.
And apropos the word trigger, the trigger is not the actual problem. It's that what it is evoking in the nervous system is that memory of an unresolved moment.
You know, that's such an interesting point, and I'm going to completely go on a tangent here. But I think we live in a world of these trigger warnings where we think the trigger is the problem. And I saw a letter the other day. I couldn't believe it. It was a letter from a school principal in, I think, Boston to his Muslim parent body, saying he's really apologizes for the Holocaust curriculum that they had recently done and that it made these children feel excluded, unimportant, that their story doesn't matter, that they're unseen, blah, 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 blah. This letter was like super woke, like, you know, we so sorry that this triggered all these awful experiences for you and awful emotions. And we just, you know, we commit to do better. And honestly, the letter was written in such a way that it kind of sounded like lovely and therapeutic and we care about you. But fundamentally, the problem is not the trigger. The problem is the story that trigger evokes, because life is full of triggers and we cannot bubble wrap people and we cannot, you know, bubble wrap reality so that people aren't triggered. People have to learn.
In coaching, we often say on that exact point that the present moment pulls on an emotional thread.
Oh, I love that. That's genius. I love that analogy. Is it an analogy or a metaphor?
Yeah, so it's pulling on that, both.
Yes.
But so then the question doesn't become, why am I overreacting in this moment? Yeah. The better question is, what does this remind my nervous system of?
That's brilliant. And I know that it's an absolute fact that if you have an outsized reaction to an ordinary thing, if you watch yourself and you're having this completely, really like extreme reaction to something that really is just, you've got to know that you have got a childhood wound there. Am I right, Lise?
Beautiful, 100%. You know, what I often say to clients of mine, you know, we talk about this big word. We love to say self-aware. Or I'm going to find myself, right? And what, you know, you is not lost. But what we're really talking about is that finding myself or being self-aware is really just someone who is aware of their parts, right? We have many parts. I don't know how to say the word parts.
Just embrace the parts. Embrace it.
Sorry,
I made you self-conscious. It's just cute.
Parts, if I'm really going to be Australian, let's be honest. Chalakim. Now I'm Israeli. I'll just say chalakim, okay? Anyway. We have many parts of ourselves, and self-aware just means I'm really aware of which part of me is functioning right now. As I like to say to my clients, we have hundreds and thousands of parts that live in our emotional basement, right?
Yeah.
And then the part right now, I want to say, who's in my living room? Who's come up and who's in the living room interacting with this person? When it comes to an inner child, which is really just a child part of me or a wounded child part of me, because let's be honest, they're not usually my most high functioning parts.
Yeah.
When I'm in relationship, either in friendship or in a marriage, you know, or at work, I want to be able to say, who's standing in front of me? Is it my 6-year-old or is it adult me? And can I maybe say to 6-year-old me, you know what? I know that you're there and I notice that you've reacted, but come stand behind me. And let adult me deal with this situation. And adult me has a lot more resources available. Adult me doesn't have to think in black and white. Adult me doesn't have to have a temper tantrum. Right? Adult me, like you were saying, doesn't have to be childish, but it can take care of the childlike part in me.
I love that. That is absolutely brilliant. But what happens if the adult part of you is a punitive parent? Or is that a different part? Like, I mean, how do you know which part? Like, how do you protect that childlike part, reassure that childlike part without shaming the childlike part or banishing the childlike part? Do you know what I'm saying?
Give me an example so I make sure to know what you mean.
Say for example, yesterday I took my dog to the vet and he needed some vaccines. And then the vet asked me to hold him still while she brought out all these big needles. And I was like, I'm scared. And in my own head, I was like, that's so stupid. You know, like she just asked you to hold the dog. Like, you know, like that's so stupid. But then the vet was so kind. She was like, let me call someone else to hold the dog so that, hold Rusty, little Rusty, so that, you know, because I can see it, this is hard for you. So she was actually so much nicer to my childish part that was scared of the big needles. Mm. And like I was worried I wouldn't hold him properly and then it would hurt him. You know, it wasn't really an adult part, a capable, okay, I can hold the dog kind of part. But my reaction to that part was very much, you know, that's so embarrassing and so stupid. Like just, you know, man up. But she was so nice to me. Why can't I be nice to myself? You know, where's that part? So that's what I mean. Sometimes it's,
I would maybe put a spin on that, Paul, because I actually think the mean part is a childish part.
Mm.
Because I think the adult part in you knows, of course, adults have fears. That's totally normal. Every adult has a fear. But a child part in me thinks that fear is embarrassing. Or a child part, you know, like I actually think it's the child in me that becomes really critical. Because adult in me can hold complexity. Whereas a child, you know, it's like when your kid goes to school and is crying, I don't know, it happened, remember my story of my son who went crying because he had got caught in a siren and whatever. The child part in him goes, that's really embarrassing. Big boys don't cry, right? The adult in him, I'm hoping, will be an adult who says, of course boys cry. Like I'm allowed to have a range of emotion. In fact, when my adult stands in front, it's far more forgiving.
I was about to say it's filled with self-compassion.
Yeah. That's how you know it's the adult, I guess. Yes, yeah, that's a litmus test. Yeah,
reparenting an inner child is filled with self-compassion. It's far more forgiving. It's exactly what Lisa said. It can hold complexity. It can hold many emotions simultaneously.
Mm.
It's far more understanding.
So what do you mean when you say that it's not an actual child that's inside of you? It's a childish part. So I saw this amazing definition. My sister's a psychologist in Israel, and I mentioned to her that we're going to be talking about the inner child, and she mentioned this thing called schema therapy. This is how schema therapy defines the inner child. It refers to the part of you that carries the emotions, needs, and experiences from childhood. It isn't literally a child inside of you, but a way of understanding how early experiences continue to affect your feelings and behavior as an adult. Because it's a weird thing, like, because when you are triggered, all of a sudden, it's not the adult that's there in the living room. There's someone else in the living room, and it takes awareness to say, okay, let's bring a broader perspective to this moment.
It's also awareness of the feeling. So like one or two just tangible examples on that note would be not getting a reply to a message. If you've messaged someone and they're just not responding, it feels like abandonment.
Mm.
It feels like abandonment. Feedback from your boss at work, especially negative feedback or constructive feedback, will feel like criticism of your self-worth. If it's your inner child receptive to that and not adult you who says, wow, this is a chance for me to grow and develop. Inner child sees that as an attack on your worth or being excluded from something or not invited to something feels painful. It's the feeling. You're having coffee with someone and they're doing something else. You feel rejected.
Mm. Rejected or abandoned or dropped out of mind, uncared for. It's whatever that wound is.
But put it, why are those feelings so deep? Because in the world of a child, right, if you are rejected, if you are abandoned, it feels like a death experience, right? Because children are so dependent. They're so little. which is parents, what we forget about kids is they're so little and so vulnerable.
They're vulnerable and they are literally helpless. Their survival is at stake. You know, we are the ones who keep them alive, literally.
And if you look at the brain, this kind of threat, even though it used to be a physical threat, the emotional rejection, abandonment, attack on my self-worth, the same area in the brain is lit up. If you look at functional MRIs, for example, the same area that is lit up as physical pain.
Oh, goodness. Really? That's amazing. Yeah. And Lise, what you just said is so amazing that it's like a death feeling. It's such, they are such big feelings, and that's why they are triggered, because it's those big feelings.
I don't know if you guys, if it was true for you when you were young moms, but there was a lot of support for the cried out method for kids, right? For babies.
Oh my God.
Just let them cry it out until they sleep.
Do not.
And what they found is what that ended up doing on an infant's brain was really terrible, because the infant interpreted that as, I'm being left to die. You know, they don't know yet that someone's coming, or I just need to fall asleep. Like, there was a certain, I needed to be attended to in my distress.
And no one came.
And no one came.
Wow.
You know, which means when I'm stressed, no one comes. And that imprints on the nervous system, right? So by the time you're an adult and you don't answer my WhatsApp, that's going to feel like no one's coming. And, you know, as an adult, you get to say, oh, that was then. Adult me can stand in front and say, I can feel that feeling, and I can know that actually sometimes people take half a day to answer a WhatsApp. They just do, because life is busy and people are crazy. The child in me will go berserk.
It's just that awareness of when those big feelings come up, and then
and that restraint, that holding space, it's such a muscle to work on and strengthen.
The path to great mental health is really consciousness, right?
Yeah.
You know, the path to great parenting, the path to great marriage, like, is really when I can start to use broader lenses to see that life is lived in gray. And the more conscious I get, the more we talk about aware means just aware of the parts of me. And the more I can start to do that, the more I can take a breath and say, what is actually going on here? And most of us, myself included, we tend to shoot from the hip with the little girl in me that just like went berserk for whatever reasons.
I really want to pick this up after the break.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Welcome back to Life and Lattes. I've got a message here from Carol. Morning, I can see an alarm clock being thrown against the wall. Yes, I think that's what Lisa would do with the puzzle alarm clock. And here is a WhatsApp from Karen, hi, checking in from Jerusalem. Wow, this sounds incredible. Fascinating. Being in nursing AM on God's clock. SM and early riser, astounding. I'm sorry, that maybe, I don't know what SM means. Is that a shorthand for something, Craig? We need a rushy on that WhatsApp. Or maybe, Karen, clarify yourself. We've had espresso yourself, and now we've got clarify yourself on our show. So we are talking about the inner child, and we are talking about the power of awareness to regulate those childish parts so that we don't react from that childish part, throw our toys out of the cot, tantrum, freeze, shut down, you know, run away. Shame. One of my mom's little stories is when she said she was 5 or 3 or something like that. She said she packed a little suitcase with 2 pairs of panties, and she said, that's it, she's leaving home. And she walked to her front gate. But it is, you know, it's you know, those childish parts, those parts that had such big feelings, big emotions, and just didn't know what to do with them, didn't have the resources that we do have as adults to make sense of things. And awareness is how we regulate and how we look at that child part with kindness, with compassion. And
without judgment.
A big part
of mindfulness-based stress reduction is to train yourself to be in a moment, in a present moment, without judgment. So you're really training yourself to be, to feel, to notice, to observe without the whole story that usually comes with it.
That is actually so spot on. I just wrote an article recently and I was looking at a lot of content by Eli Harwood, who writes a lot of books about attachment, secure parenting, secure attachment. And she said that awareness, how do you know it's awareness? Because it is compassionate, because it is non-judgmental. If your awareness comes with, I shouldn't have, I was such a bad, because what I wrote is that whenever I used to go to parenting classes and I would, you know, learn some new thing about what you're supposed to do with children, for example, if they're having a tantrum, you validate what they're feeling. Every time I learned something new, I would be filled with this terrible remorse of like all the years that I hadn't done that.
And what did I get wrong?
Yes. And it never felt like, you know, and then she made that distinction. Awareness is not a judgment. It is such a compassionate view. This is how I was then. I was acting with all the knowledge that I had in my head at the time. And that's all I had there, you know, and now I know more.
And I think we can go also, you know, in our adult life where child parts get triggered. When you're a child, those feelings are legitimately life or death feelings, right? Which is why the amygdala, the nervous system, gets activated, because it does feel life or death. It does feel scary. And my fight, flight, or freeze response gets activated, right? Can I fight this situation? Can I run away from the situation? Or do I just have to freeze and take it? When I'm an adult and those difficult moments come up in my life, which happens to us all the time, right? A difficult conversation, a difficult event, whatever. It's so important to be able to, you know, when we talk about, well, become more conscious or aware, such a good question just to ask yourself is saying, is this really a life or death situation, or am I just uncomfortable? And the Brilliant. Beautiful thing about being an adult is we actually can deal with discomfort. We don't die from discomfort.
It's not dangerous. It's just, yes, it's trying it's to tell your nervous system, I'm not in danger. This is uncomfortable, or this is painful, or this is hard.
And that I have resources and I have a way that I actually can deal with these things. Mm. I don't have to shut down. I don't have to, you know, smack you in the head. I don't have to run away. Like, I actually can figure out a way to manage the situation.
I'm not helpless. Difficult. I'm not helpless. A child, being a child and being wounded as a child can evoke that feeling, I'm helpless. My survival's at stake. I'm in danger. And as an adult, when those same feelings are evoked, we can be the adults in the living room and say, I'm not in danger, you know, and I have all of these resources that I could turn to. I love that, Lise. Thank you so much. That's really so enlightening. But I think that after our song, which we're about to play, we're going to go to the other side of the inner child, and that is being childlike and all those beautiful qualities, and let's bring them out.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome back to Life and Lattes. That song was beautiful. That was Passenger by Noah Kahan, chosen by DJ Lisa. And absolutely, that child is a passenger. And one of the lines in that song was, though you make me battle, you make me whole. Isn't that beautiful? I love that.
And I love the part that you said, the old me won't work.
Oh, I love that. So on that note, here's a WhatsApp from Anonymous. My dad was always shouting when I was a child. Now I always think people are angry with me. How do I reset my nervous system?
Wow. Thank you for that question, because it's so brilliant and goes so to the heart of what we're saying. You know, nervous system reset is, there's many, many pathways to doing it. But it's almost like being able to say, wow, from an angry, scary, shouty dad, I have a very, very sensitive nervous system and it's going off when it doesn't need to. And so the best ways that I know to reset a nervous system, there are a myriad of ways. So I encourage everyone, I encourage my clients, whoever to, or I always say, like, we have to figure out what works for us. It's a bit of a shidduch, you know?
Yeah.
But certain things are amazing. Mindfulness is amazing. Meditation is amazing. Exercise is amazing.
Breath work.
Yeah. You know, to really say, I may want to take myself on a bit of a journey, yoga, you know, all the practices that start to say, let me slow myself down. And you don't have to become a whole new person. It's being able to say, all I need is a slight amount of awareness that that's who's in the living room. And awareness changes everything. Now, the minute I'm aware that that's why I'm responding like that is the minute I can take care of that part.
So the child is always going to be popping up into that living room with the trigger, but they don't have to be standing in front.
Exactly.
Okay. So it's not about deleting that child, yeah.
Right. Mm. And I want to say to the listener, the biggest trick that that child part plays on us is that we can never heal it. Mm. And we don't so much as need to get rid of it as to just be aware of it.
And meet it with compassion and kindness.
Yes. Mm. And then I can evoke an adult part of me. Mm-hmm. And just sometimes it just takes a minute, a second, oh, there you are. And then, okay, who would I like to deal with the situation? And anything that works with slowing down the reactive time of your nervous system will be extremely helpful.
I love that. Okay, we got just a few minutes left, and I really want to talk about the childlike part. Andy, tell us about the two-minute raisin. Quick.
Wow, quick. Okay, so basically the part of the two-minute raisin is a mindfulness technique to help us be more present and slow down. And in our MBSR training for mindfulness-based stress reduction, we had to eat a raisin in 2 minutes. And that sounds like a simple task, but I promise you, it is really difficult to eat one tiny raisin at such a slow pace. But what it does allow for is a noticing, is a slowing down, is a savoring, is an appreciation, a curiosity, a fascination. And that is the other inner child part, where children are fascinated by everything. Only adults
with wonder.
Are fascinated.
Yes.
Yeah, children are fascinated by everything, right? How does this work? This is so interesting. Adults are fascinated by outcomes. And if you slow down your life experience enough to notice things and live with a healthy curiosity and fascination, you know, we have two mindsets. We've got an expert brain and a learning brain. Mm. Our expert brain is our adult brain of performance that needs to know. I need to have things labeled and filed away and have certainty. The learning mindset, which is the mindset of playfulness. And by the way, every healthy workplace has performance and playfulness. You don't have to choose. Mm. But the playfulness part of me says, I don't know. Instead of this being a definite certainty, let me meet this moment with curiosity and fascination and just hold one big fat question mark of, wow, I don't know. I want a learning brain, a learning mindset where I'm curious and open-minded and fascinated, and I don't have to know. I don't have to label everything. And that wonder basically creates possibility and joy. And that's the part of the brain that we want to activate.
Oh, beautiful. Okay, so let that percolate until next week, Wednesday. Embrace your inner child.